Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Welcome to our second episode of the year. It is April 6th. The Kings and the Ducks are tied on top of the division, which is all very exciting, I think, especially considering where we were last year. So once again, we're going to be joined by Nick in a couple seconds, but for now, we're going to be talking mostly about the last couple weeks of Kings hockey, which I think no one's been really all that impressed with. We went on our usual Western Canada swing, which usually is a little more favorable, but kind of uninspired performance against the Canucks, and then the Calgary Flames nearly took a couple more points away from the Kings and almost made it impossible to win the division. But as we know, Christopher Stieg and Jeff Carter came through at the end of the game. So it looks like Nick is calling in, so I'll go ahead and get him on.
Hello.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am doing good. I already gave a fun little intro about the last couple weeks, but I guess we'll start there. Did you catch any of the action yesterday?
I did. I hope I did. I mean, I did recap it. So if I didn't watch the game and did recap it, that would have been impressive. But I was able to
I've
watch
always
the game.
Admired your improv skills. So I just, I got to ask.
I can make things up on the fly pretty well. But I did actually manage to watch the game yesterday. It was rough. They won, but it was rough.
Yeah, and I think one thing I wanted to talk about today that I didn't really plan anything for and I didn't tell you about, so we're off to a good start already, is the whole empty net situation. I noticed, the question was asked and has been asked for a while now, Daryl Sutter waits too long to pull the goaltender. And against Vancouver, the Kings had a good shift in the offensive zone with, under 2 minutes to go. Had a good 20-second window where they could have pulled Jonathan Quick and didn't, had the puck cleared, and then really didn't get in the offensive zone until there were about 15 seconds left. So I don't think anybody expected yesterday that the Kings actually would manage to score on Calgary, given that they didn't really get a serious push without the goalie until about a minute left. Is that something that really strikes you as a concern? Do you think it's sort of minimal importance?
I know the math says to pull the goalie earlier, which is, I'm not going to argue with the math. It's the Kings should probably do that. But I will say the Kings have been extraordinarily successful with the goalie pulled early, with the goalie pulled late this year, which means they probably should pull him sooner, but it's worked this year. So I'm not going to make too many complaints about it. Hopefully in the playoffs, the Kings won't be trailing very often to make this a big thing, which was a problem. Back in 2013-14, the Kings were behind all the time and coming from behind. Well, hopefully less of that this year, although I think I said back then that it still feels like a fluke because we know the Kings are a good team, so they should be on top of games more often. So hopefully they're not behind late in games. I don't think it's a big deal. It's not going to cost the Kings very much. It's never very likely to score a goal in the last minute and a half or so anyway, or the last 4 minutes even. So hopefully the Kings just don't find themselves in that spot. Because most likely, no matter when they pull the goalie, the odds are stacked against them to actually succeed in coming from behind and tying the game. But they did do it last night, and that's great because I also had given up on that game and was ready to concede home ice advantage and the division all in one fell swoop, but they proved me wrong again.
Yep, and the one thing I noticed too is I forget what article it was for, but the Kings, I think, are at the bottom of the league in empty net goals allowed, or at least they probably were before Vancouver scored on Monday. So that's, a little bit of a silver lining to us screaming at our televisions with a minute and 30 seconds left. But it was an interesting set of guys they had out there. It was Jamie McBain throwing the puck to the net, maybe getting lucky with the bounce, but getting the puck through, Christopher Stieg knocking it in. So it's interesting because that's two guys that you didn't think would, well, obviously you wouldn't think Verstee would have an impact at the beginning of the year because he wasn't on the Kings, but it's been interesting watching, especially the last couple of games. I think it was Darrell Evans was throwing out the theory that Kyle Clifford was only scratched so Sutter could give Shore and Andreoff a chance to kind of earn their spot on the playoff roster. But there was a lot of uncertainty with those last couple spots, and especially with Scuderi getting benched. I don't know if there's a real chance of Scuderi being out of the lineup, at least for game one of the playoffs, but it's allowing us to see a couple different alignments.
I will say I think there's a real chance Scuderi gets benched. I think the Kings only took him on as a flyer anyway. I think it was more of a...
Hey, Nick, hold on for a second. You're echoing quite a bit. It actually sounds pretty great, but I can't understand a word you're saying.
Is this better?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I do think there's a real chance that Scuderi gets... Am I okay?
Yes.
Okay. I do think there's a real chance Scuderi gets benched. I think he was only picked up as a flyer, like, just as a gamble anyway, because the Kings, by the time they traded for Scuderi, like, the Kings had locked up a spot. I think they were trying to find lightning in a bottle, and I think it's pretty clear it hasn't worked. Scuderi's role is very gradually diminished as he's been a King. We already have noted, I think on the last podcast, that he's not playing when the Kings are behind, which he probably wouldn't anyway, but he's not playing when the Kings are behind. He's no longer skating with Doughty most nights. It's pretty clear that Shen needs a real babysitter, and Scuderi wasn't cutting it. I think there is a real chance he gets benched. I mean, Robin Regier did not dress much for the Kings in that playoff run. I know it's because he got hurt, but he got healthy, and the Kings continued to scratch him when they had a chance to dress him. And you can look at what Daryl Sutter said about Gaborik as kind of a clue there that maybe he didn't want to put him back in the lineup without having much play heading into the playoffs, but I do think there's a real chance Scuderi is not a major factor in the playoff roster. They'll probably play game one, like you said, but I think if he struggles, it'll be a quick hook. Sutter is completely willing to make adjustments in a playoff series, he's shown before, which saw Tanner Pearson drawn to the lineup after initially drawing out of the lineup back in the 2014 Shark series, which was still a decision I don't understand to begin with, but I think we'll see that going forward. I wouldn't be surprised to see Scuderi actually do get scratched, and I wouldn't be surprised if we are seeing, with the Kings having all kinds of cushion here down the stretch and just pretty much playing up a string, that I wouldn't be surprised if there was a lot of seeing what guys are capable of putting guys in different roles and getting guys a look on in different spots is kind of a tryout, but really just seeing what the Kings have going forward.
Right, and Sutter has done that with defensemen in the past, especially when they've gotten hurt in the playoffs, where he sort of, I think it was Regier before the Cup Finals in 2014, getting knocked out. There were mixed reports on whether he was healthy enough to play. For all I know, he might have, still been gimpy, but he didn't get put back in the lineup for that series against the Rangers. So I don't know how much I read into that quote on Gaborik. You're talking about the guy who scored 14 goals in the playoffs 2 years ago. So I think the sort of estimate for how long he was going to be out would put him returning late April. And it would be hard to see a scenario where if the Kings are down 3-2 in their opening round series or something and have been in a bit of a slump, if Gavrik's okay, he'll be in there.
I mean, Gavrik is definitely – they're not going to hold out Marian Gavrik out of the lineup. I mean, they're just not going to. I don't know why Sutter said what he did. I don't know why Sutter says most of the things that he says, but he always – or I won't say always, but most of the time he actually does do the right hand – the right thing. So I do believe that we will see Marian Gavrik in the playoffs. I don't think there's any way you can actually hold out someone that skilled, especially in a team that's like 18th or 19th and 5 or 5 goals this year. That's not a very good offensive team. If Gavrik at 75% is better than Andy Andreoff, he's better than Jordan Nolan, he's better than Kyle Clifford, he's better than those guys, and you can't hold him out of the lineup because you think he's not at 100%. Unless you think he's going to get hurt again. That's the only real concern. If you think he's going to get hurt again or worse, then you can hold him out. But it doesn't sound like that was the concern.
Yeah, and the hope is that the Kings can actually, you know, get ahead in this series. And, you know, Daryl Sutter, maybe his hand isn't forced to do that kind of thing. So going into the playoffs then, with Gavrik out, obviously, Chris Versteeg is interesting to me because I forget how little he played in 2014 when the Kings faced the Hawks. I think he had like 3 minutes in all of Game 7. Last year in the Cup run, he played a little bit more, but I think he played most of the Cup finals, but didn't really get above 12 or 13 minutes. But obviously scored last night. I think he's got 3 goals in 12 games or something for the Kings so far, but he didn't really last in the first line yesterday. Do you think he can hold it down next to Andrei Kopitar? Do you think Sutter's going to try to put him on the bottom six and use him in more of a situational role?
I think Sutter would like to use him in the bottom six as a situational role. I'm not sure the roster really calls for it right now because it's not like Tanner Pearson has really grabbed that spot, and it's not like... I mean, the Kings have 2 really good, healthy wingers right now with Toffoli and with Lucic, and that's so you have those 2 guys. So you have 2 other spots, and Versteeg pretty much takes one of those spots, and then you have some combination, or well, it's pretty much just a combination of Brown, Pearson, and Versteeg that take those spots, and none of them are hugely inspiring. Even if I have high hopes for Tanner Pearson going forward, they're not super inspiring at this point in time. So I do think he'll see time up there if Gavrik can't get healthy and if Gavrik isn't producing like he has in the past, or if Gavrik produces like he has much of this season, then you might see him up there. So I do think we'll see Versteeg up there, but I do remember that it seemed very much like Joel Quenneville hated Chris Versteeg, actually, didn't want to play him very much at all, would scratch him. And so I think that Sutter and Quenneville are actually very much on the same page in that regard. I don't think that Sutter is Versteeg's hugest fan. I think he was acquired because he was available and cheap, which he didn't cost the Kings very much with Zikov going back the other way. I did say to Chanel from ThanksBud that I was like 90% sure that Chris Versteeg would get benched at some point by Sutter, so we'll see if that happens going forward.
Yeah, it would be a bit of an upset if he didn't, I think. And especially when Gavrik comes back because, you know, Versteeg has taken shifts on the fourth line, but if you look at Kyle Clifford and Andy Andreoff and what Sutter's probably going to be looking for from his fourth line, if Versteeg... you know, takes a couple bad penalties, doesn't find the back of the net, Gavrik comes back, Sutter could very easily field a good lineup without Chris Versteeg. And I don't want to see him on the bench, especially because that probably means we're, you know, watching Dwight King and Dustin Brown and Nick Shore sort of grind for a while and not scoring goals. But, you know, Sutter knows more than I do.
I do not want to see Dwight King do anything. It's actually really hard to see Dwight King. I haven't seen Dwight King in months, actually. I haven't seen him in a very long time.
Go ahead.
I was just you know, looking up some stuff on Pearson earlier, and I was looking at guys that have scored 30 points around their age 23, 24 seasons, and I was reminded that Dwight King had 30 points in 2013-14. And it's just, you watch him this year, and it's like, how did that happen? It's a mystery to me. Dwight King has had a real rough go since his very early stages of his comeback to the lineup this year. He has not done anything this year. He's been a mess.
Yeah, and when he came up in 2012, obviously he provided some sort of spark. And he's got, I guess, 7 goals this year, which is as many as Andy Andreoff. 7 in 45 games, which isn't, you know, worlds behind his past years. He's only got a career high of, I guess, 15 goals, which was that 2013-14 season. But the goals sort of just come out of nowhere for him. Like, you don't notice him all game. You forget he exists, and suddenly he's finding the net. But he hasn't done that enough, whereas someone like Tanner Pearson, you might not notice him as much, but the goals are a little more frequent, and occasionally you'll see a burst of speed or a good, you know, zone entry or whatnot. So it's fascinating, because I don't know if Dwight King is ever going to get healthy scratched, but if he is, it seems like now would be kind of the time to do it.
If nothing else, send a message or something. I mean, I don't know how much it does, but it can't hurt in these last two games unless you really think he's going to be the difference against Anaheim specifically. It can't hurt to scratch him at this point. He's definitely – he hasn't done anything to make himself more noticeable than Andy Andreoff, who's admittedly on a lucky streak, where he has had some real positive results lately since his move to wing. So you have Andreoff, you have Nolan, you have these guys, or King is probably better than those guys, but he's playing really bad right now. He has probably been the worst King on the roster over the last month and a half. So it can't hurt to scratch him. I mean, if you're going to mess with the human psyche and emotionally encourage somebody or motivate them to do better, that's one way to go about it, I guess. I don't know Dwight King's personality well enough to know what really gets him going, but I don't know. You got to do something to get him going or not play him, because he has not done anything of late.
Right, and unfortunately, I think it's a little too late for, you know, we talked, well, I mentioned that Sutter might have been doing something with Clifford to give other guys a shot, but against the Ducks, he's going to ice, in his eyes, his best lineup, and I think he still thinks that includes Dwight King. Maybe if the King moves on Thursday and are sort of out of it going into Saturday, maybe that's the time for a couple guys to get some rest and maybe for Sutter to do that.
That's possible. I mean, it's not going to make a difference. You're pretty much, the bottom six is not very productive offensively, and you're just rearranging deck chairs in the Titanic, but it's not that bad, and it's not that good. You're not going to lose with that bottom six, but you can maybe get more out of it, and you can get more out of Dwight King, or he has been able to put up more in the past. Even last season, when he didn't score as much as he did in 13-14, he was a useful role player, and he has not been a useful role player this year. He hasn't done the little things like getting the puck deep or winning puck battles. He hasn't done those things. He hasn't done the things that are good to the eye test. He hasn't been physical. He hasn't been involved offensively. He's had a rough go. I like Dwight King a lot. I Stockholm Syndrome myself into liking him kind of by accident 2 years ago. And then you and me both saw him score a hat trick in person, which was easily the weirdest thing I've ever seen in at a hockey game in person, or the thing I least expected to happen anyway. Like Dwight King.
Top five for me.
I've seen some weirds. I saw the Jack Johnson Tebow thing. I saw Quick's Jedi save. I saw all kinds of weird stuff, and that was easily the weirdest, most unexpected thing I ever saw at a game, was Dwight King's hat trick. And that was in the same game as, like, I think it was one of Mike Richards' last shorthanded goals as a King, too. He scored in that game as well. And it's Dwight King's hat trick that stands out. I was like, oh my God, I can't actually believe I saw that in person. I saw Juan Pierre hit a home run in person, and Dwight King's hat trick is more unbelievable than that. Juan Pierre hit two home runs in his whole career. So
that is staggering.
I like Dwight King, but he has not done anything lately. Anything. And hopefully they can get him going in the playoffs a little bit. Or hopefully the Kings play long enough to get him going, or he finds whatever game he's lost, because it's not there right now.
Yeah. I think Robin Regier scoring an overtime goal is the only thing I've ever witnessed that could give Dwight King's hat trick a run for its money. But, you know, it was a blast by Regier. I still remember it. He deserved it. I guess King
wasn't
deserved
that,
it too. But
wasn't that the over? That was Colorado, right? For Regier's goal?
Either Colorado or Calgary. I don't think it was Calgary. Maybe I'm just thinking of that because that would be even more hilarious. But. And an ambulance just drove by, which is good because it cut me off, and now we can move on.
Sure we could talk about Robin Regier's entire scoring career here if you want to?
I'm trying to think of other goals he scored, and all I can remember is that gif of him wiping out in the corner repeatedly. So,
you know what game it was?
It's going to be a short segment.
It wasn't Colorado. It was Columbus. It was Columbus.
Columbus.
He scored against Colorado like 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later. But it was Columbus was the overtime winner.
Sniper. All right.
Robin Regier in overtime by Mike Richards and Jeff Carter.
It only took us, until the second episode to bring up Robin Regier. I'm glad we made it. So now let's go ahead and move on. Before we started the Jewel Cast, we tweeted out the question. It seems like we've been doing a lot of voting on the website recently, so we put this one on Twitter. Which team would you rather face in the first round of the playoffs? Right now, we are essentially, I think, if not definitely, almost definitely, at a point where the Kings can only play the Nashville Predators or the San Jose Sharks. And after yesterday's results, Micah Blake McCurdy, who goes by Ineffective Math on Twitter, good follow, his formulas have it about 50-50 between the two teams. So it was a good time to ask before tomorrow makes things a little bit more clear who you would rather have the Kings face. Nick, you have any opinions on that?
I would definitely rather face the Predators. And I think the Predators are probably not as good as the Sharks to begin with. I think the Sharks are a pretty good team. And I know what I'm going to say next is not something that really coincides with like what we have written about for the last several years with the Kings. I think there's a real human element to a human narrative element to the King Sharks series that I don't enjoy at this point, that I would be a little concerned about heading into it. And if I'm the Sharks, there is not one team on earth, there's nothing else on this earth I want to do besides beat the Kings in the playoffs. That is the one thing I want. And it's like, I can remember back in 2013-14, all I wanted as a Kings fan was for the Kings to beat Chicago. I didn't care about the Cup. The Cup was gravy at that point. I mean, maybe that helps that we already had a Cup, but I wanted to beat Chicago, and I wanted that more than anything on planet Earth. And I would think if I was a Shark at this point, and I've lost the last two series in Game 7 to the Kings, particularly the last series where they blew a 3-0 lead, there is nothing else on this Earth that would vindicate the entire last run of years of this window being open for the Sharks than beating the Kings in the playoffs, because it wouldn't erase everything everything they failed to do in the playoffs, but it would definitely vindicate them on a personal level, probably as much as winning the Cup would, just beating the team that put them out. So
yeah.
I would much rather face the Predators personally, just for that reason. The Predators are also probably not as good, and I don't really care about the travel. I think travel is generally overrated at this point in the playoffs. I don't really have a strong preference for, honestly, playing the weaker team in the playoffs. I think eventually you've got to beat good teams anyway. It doesn't really matter. It's nice to get the easy run if you can, because maybe you'll get lucky and some weak team will move on, but I don't think that actually happens in the NHL playoffs that often.
Yeah, and I think, I think that's a really valid point about the human element, because I've been thinking about this a lot too, and especially I think the reason that it's a more compelling question is that Nashville has had so much success against LA this year, but I'd rather face Pecorino than Martin Jones. I still remember the losing to the Sharks in the playoffs in past years. I can, with all the jokes about the Shark Tank, I can see the crowd there being amped up for the same reason. So it just doesn't sound like a pleasant experience either way. And the readers or the followers agreed the vote right now is 61% want to face the Predators in the first round. I promised to read some of the answers, so I'll do that in a second. But the one thing that is sort of getting lost in all this, because I think everybody is afraid to look past the first round, is that playing Nashville means you get home ice in the second round if you win. And against the Ducks, maybe it's not as significant because the teams are so close to one another and because fans will, you know, Kings fans will fill up the remaining spaces in Honda Center. But the Ducks are, you know, I'd rather play them four times in Staples Center if it's a 7-game
series. I would definitely rather play them four times in Staples Center. And I don't really even care about home ice from a fan perspective. I want the matchup, and especially in a team that is pretty close to the Kings as far as talent goes and as far as ability goes, like the Ducks are right now. You want any advantage you can get. And, yes, I agree. Playing them on home ice four times would be nice. Hopefully only twice, because we would sweep them and never have to deal with them again.
Yeah, I'm on board with that plan. So reader responses. So Best Coast Show wants to play the Sharks as well. They bring up the – or actually, they want to face the Sharks. They bring up the travel reason as well as the mentally weak argument, which I saw a couple times down here. Again, you know, the Predators are sort of – I don't think they've even made a conference final. So – there's sort of an argument both ways. Maybe the Predators haven't had the same sort of expectations, but...
I'd say that's kind of a big thing, is the Predators haven't been nearly as good. Like, they've had maybe 1 or 2 years where people really expect anything out of them, but people have expected the Sharks to go to the Stanley Cup Final for, like, 10 years.
Yeah. And I'm looking for other Sharks reasons. So Brian Virgil says it would just be awesome to spank the Sharks in the playoffs again, which... I can't argue with, but again, as I mentioned, a lot of the reasons, or a lot of the readers wanted to face the Predators instead. The only other argument I'm seeing against the Predators is a SoCal Texan who doesn't like the matchup with Nashville speed, which, you know, I try to think of past matchups with the Kings facing sort of, you know, teams that would skate circles around them, and I don't know. I think the Kings are disciplined enough to weather a faster team, but you look at, like, past matches with the Blues, and maybe it's, you know, a better fit to face another team that's sort of similar to the Kings.
I mean, the Kings, weren't the Canucks in 2012 supposed to be a fast team that played quick and creative hockey, and the Kings just smoked them? I mean, it was a tough series. It wasn't as close as the 4-1 series score, but the Kings, they were fine, and... I don't really buy that the Kings actually struggle against slower teams. I mean, it's possible, or faster teams. It's possible, but I don't think it makes a big difference. I think the Kings pretty much just take their game wherever they want to go and force other teams to adjust to them. That's kind of been their hallmark, is they just play their game no matter what the situation is and force everybody else to adjust. They aren't going to have to change their game for somebody else, and they're going to be able to control the game they want to. The question is whether you can score enough goals to beat them, or if the Kings could pretty much... Are the Kings going to beat themselves and not be able to put pucks in the net? That's always been their only real undoing. Or Jonathan Quick. Is Jonathan Quick going to struggle enough in the series to let you win, which hasn't happened very often in the playoffs?
Yeah. As for Predators' arguments, Matt Nelson would like the Ducks and the Sharks to beat the ever-living hell out of each other in the first round. Jay Zaris, who comments quite a bit on our site, would... thinks that the travel issue is overrated and that Rene is a weaker matchup, and also brings up the narrative, of course. Jack, followed by a bunch of numbers, but Jack also would like the Predators, doesn't mind the four-hour flight. And finally, Andrew would like the Predators, Andrew Leithman would like the Predators because the Sharks are better, and so he doesn't have to fight Conrad. And that led to an amusing argument, which you can read if you look at our favorites.
It was very amusing.
Very, very amusing. And, of course, Chris Jenkins would like to face the LA Lakers, which I can't argue with either. They're not very good.
I would also like to face the LA Lakers personally, just because I would like to drag Nick Young all over the ice right now because he is pretty much embarrassing.
He's not long for this city, I think, and he also went to USC, which holds absolutely no impact on my bias, none at all. All I've seen is Kobe wearing a Kings jersey, and I don't think they have a lot of skaters, although I think the Lakers did have actually a player from Slovenia a while back. I seem to remember Andrzej Kopitar hanging out with somebody and shooting basketballs, and I seem to remember Kopitar being better at basketball than the other guy was at hockey.
I think it's probably common in most cases, but the question is whether the Kings could beat the Lakers at basketball, and I think that's a real competition.
Can we call up Jeff Schultz?
I don't see why not.
That's an auger. Yeah.
I'm okay with that. They could sign me. I'm tall. I'll go stand in the paint, take a beating, grab some rebounds. I could probably take down
there
the Lakers.
You could be the sixth man. Actually, you, Auger, and Schultz all at the same time. It would be pretty imposing. Sorry, go ahead.
We would be a pretty good basketball team. I'm just saying.
I think so. I've got a little bit of the height, but I took a lot of time off. I played in a company basketball tournament, and I kind of embarrassed myself. So we get in a couple good practices. I like our chances.
I do too.
So now, I'm looking to see what else we wanted to really talk about today. We've got the sort of the first round matchup preview out of the way. We talked a little bit about the last couple weeks of action, but I do want to talk a little bit more about what's been happening, because the Kings, you know, and again, one of the readers who tweeted us mentioned that Daryl Sutter has been going a little bit crazy with the tinkering, with trying people in new roles, and I don't know if I'm overly concerned about all of the losses, but you should be concerned if your best players aren't achieving. And Jake Muzzin has had an interesting couple weeks.
He has. Last night he had a rough game for sure. The thing about Jake Muzzin is that he never looks very good anyway. Like, he's always a player that kind of looks out of place. He has a goofy skating stride, and he's lumbering, and he's... But he gets the job done most of the time. So, but when he doesn't, like he has maybe in the last couple of weeks or last night, he looks really bad. Like, I think it was the Flames' second goal, the game-tying goal at 2-2, where he had gone down too early to try and block a shot and then was left trying to scramble around, and he pretty much left the slot wide open. It doesn't look very good. Jim Fox used to talk about how he had confidence issues when he first came into the league and how they were trying to get him into a better headspace and trying to put him in a place to succeed so he could build some confidence. He might be a little shaken right now, but ultimately I'm really not concerned about Jake Muzzin's play.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of it has to do with Alec Martinez's absence from the lineup. He's sort of, you know, he's in past months, he's taken on the toughest assignments on the team. With Doughty playing with Braden McNabb, maybe you're putting Jake Muzzin in a bit of a different spot than he's used to. But I'm hoping Alec comes back before the playoffs start. He was mentioned as day-to-day. I doubt there's anything really, really wrong with him. Muzzin had the turnover that set up Jonathan Quick's save of the year against San Jose. He's taken a couple penalties. So it's a mild concern, I think.
I mean, the Kings do need him to be at their best to be competitive in the playoffs. They probably can't survive with one pairing, especially if Skidori does draw into the lineup on the bottom pairing, because that means they'd have to heavily rely on Doughty, Muzzin, and Martinez to carry the load on the top two pairings. So if Muzzin's not his best, that is a concern. But I think Muzzin will be fine. Fairly confident that he will be fine.
Yeah, I trust you. yesterday, I think we saw Kevin Gravel and Jamie McBain in the lineup together for the first time ever, which was interesting. Kevin Gravel, I don't think he's going to play in the playoffs. It would be kind of a fun story for him to do something in the playoffs, but same with Nick Dowd. He's shown flashes of some really good play. For the first four games, I wouldn't even call him flashes. I just think he was consistently very good. But I think that those two are going to play a role next year, but I don't think Sutter's going to try anything too fancy with the new guys.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're probably up here for a little bit of experience late in the season, probably like the plan was for Jordan Wheel last year before they scratched him at the last minute for whatever reason that was. I guess just to punish him for being tiny, I guess was the reason they scratched him. But I think they're just up here for a little bit of good experience with the Kings. I mean, it's like being a black ace, except you actually get to play, and it's not the playoffs yet. But you get some good experience. You get to practice with the team. You get a nice paycheck for a couple of games at least. It's a good experience for them. I don't think we'll see anything too wild with them going forward unless there's some injuries. But nothing to really set them apart. Dow did look good early. Had the real bad turnover, I think, in the last game he played, or maybe the second to last game he played. I would imagine that's something he needs to iron out of his game going forward. It's not often that Jim Fox actually, like, he gives the old Jim Fox woe for a bad play by the Kings. And we got that one for the Nick Dowd turnover before he knew it was Nick Dowd, too. So not a good sign there. But he'll iron that out, and hopefully next season this is an experience that helps him.
Yeah, and a quick shout-out to Mike Brodzinski, Johnny Brodzinski's dad, who suggested that Johnny Brodzinski should fill out one of those fourth-line spots. He's actually come on pretty strong in Ontario lately. It would be pretty fun to see three guys from St. Cloud State all out there at the same time, but, you know, their time will come. But thanks for reading, as always. As for the rest of the fourth line, I'm going to check. I haven't checked the results yet, but we did post a poll on the website asking who the readers would like to see once the playoffs begin. Again, it's been very democratic on the website recently. We're at about 46% that want to see Clifford and Andrioff over the two Knicks, Shore and Dowd. Based on recent form, not sure I can totally argue with that, but I think Andrioff and Shore are going to be, you know, on a very short leash in the playoffs, regardless of who does get in there.
I would much rather see Nick Shore in the playoffs, especially in a low-scoring game like the playoffs usually are. I would much rather see Nick Shore there. I think he's a much better player. I don't think that's even really that close, even with Andrioff's uptick in play lately. Whether or not you buy that Nick Shore's run of no offense is luck or is bad luck or bad skill, I think he is a better player. I think he is very effective defensively, and I would just much rather see him every game in the playoffs, regardless of what happens, unless he literally just falls apart as a hockey player. He's been a pretty steady player. He just can't score. And I don't know if that's going to be very true going forward.
Yeah, and, you know, people talk about overreacting to short runs of play, especially late in the season. You know, Andrioff has three goals in his last six games, but, you know, he's not going to score three goals in the first round of the playoffs, you know. If he does, then I will take back everything I've ever said about Andy Andrioff. But Nick Shore, still, I think, leading the possession for players that have actually played quite a bit. It'll be interesting to see which way Daryl goes tomorrow. So we've got,
just real quick on Nick Shore before we move on. A lot of people point out how his lack of offense means that he hasn't really helped the Kings, and you can point to that because he's been outscored this season. I think he's a minus 10. Plus minus always an iffy stat, but... Mm-hmm. He was a minus 8 through the first 20 games of the season. So he's only been a minus 2 since then. He's only been outscored by a couple of goals. And most of that's from two of the last three games he played when he's a minus 3. He hasn't really been outscored in the last 50 games of his season. And he should be in the lineup. He is going to be a fixture on the Kings team probably going forward. He's going to gain some offense, most likely, going forward. He's not going to be a superstar. He might just be another Trevor Lewis with maybe a little more ability to play the center position, but he is a decent player. He is a useful role player, and he should absolutely be in the lineup. He can fill much more of a role than Andy Andreoff can, even if Andy Andreoff is playing his best game, which he has been lately. I would much rather see Nick Shore in the lineup.
Yeah, and I was gonna say something about Jarrett Stoll as well, that's the kind of role I assume they want him to play. Nick Shore is the number one player in Corsi 4 percentage across the league this season. Jarrett Stoll is the last place player in the entire league in Corsi 4 percentage. So I'd call it an upgrade, I think, even with Shore maybe not finding the net.
I'm going to be a little, I can't believe I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a little kind to Jarrett Stoll here and say he's had real, real tough deployment in Minnesota for a team that's not as good possession as the Kings. And he has managed to actually be pretty much even, I think, in terms of goal scoring, although his offense has been similarly terrible this year. I would much rather have Nick Shore than Jarrett Stoll, but I'll be a little bit fair to Jarrett Stoll and say his worst Corsi in the league is probably a little bit of a little bit misleading, but Jarrett Stoll does still. He is still bad.
Yeah, he is currently getting the toughest, or the second toughest, zone starts in the league compared to his teammates. Paul Gostad out in Nashville is getting the toughest assignments, and unsurprisingly, he's also got a really, really terrible set of possession numbers, but you can't blame him as much. So we are 41 minutes in. We didn't talk about Tyler Toffoli too much last week. We should probably spend a lot of time talking about Tyler Toffoli.
An hour?
Nick, I'm going to let you start.
3 hours? 4 hours? 5 hours talking about Tyler Toffoli? How long do you want to talk about Tyler Toffoli? I could talk about Tyler Toffoli.
It's only 8:42. I'll just leave it there.
Okay. Tyler Toffoli is great. And let's just point out that this cupcake thing came from the fans, and the Kings have run with it lately. It came from fans that are not even bloggers. It didn't start with the Royal Half or anything like that. It didn't start with us. It started with fans of the game, and it took off, and then the Royal Half picked it up this year after it really took off last year, and now today he was as pretty much a fan directive making cupcakes for the Los Angeles Kings and a bit of publicity and good PR. But he is Cupcake now. He is Tyler Cupcake Toffoli, and it's great, and he's adorable, and I love him, and he's great at hockey, and he's awesome.
Yeah.
And I could just keep going for another hour, hour and a half, just keep repeating all these wonderful things about him, but I do love Tyler Toffoli with all of my heart.
And I can think of so many guys who would probably, you know, bristle at the notion of being called Cupcake, and for whatever reason, Toffoli just, you know, and this goes for so many of the things he's done with, you know, over the summer when the Kings were really, you know, they were becoming known for players who were, you know, getting in run-ins with the law or doing terrible things off the ice. And the one guy, you know, who was most consistently at fan events.
The ray of sunshine.
The ray of sunshine through a terrible, terrible season and a, you know, a kind of long, sluggish offseason was Toffoli. And I, you know, I bought my Toffoli jerseys during the offseason. I've noticed more of those, especially this season. But now he's sitting on 30 goals. It feels like he could have had even more. But he, you know, he's met every expectation this year. He's gotten minutes with Andre Kopitar and excelled. He's gotten minutes with Jeff Carter and excelled. And it's, you know, he's the leading goal scorer on the team, and he's probably, you know, going to duel with Carter for that that number one scorer slot for a while. And, you know, it's nice to see when the Kings have sort of a not great prospect system at the moment. And in past years, there have been questions about whether the Kings were going to develop any forwards. He's been a huge success.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Lucic, Carter, Toffoli line, I think, as a trio, as an actual line, has been, I think, third in the league in Corsi as among, like, all units that have been used a certain amount of minutes. He's behind, like, Sidney Crosby and Patrick Hornquist and Chris Kunitz in Pittsburgh, and I can't remember who's second. I think it was Getzlaff and Perry and Raquel and Anaheim, and then there was Tyler Toffoli with Jeff Carter and Milan Lucic. So just not even with Kopitar, but with Carter and Lucic, they're just carrying the load. And that's largely because Tyler Toffoli is a great player. He is a star in the making. He is an excellent goal scorer on a team that doesn't score goals very well. He's adorable. I love him. He's great. He's awesome. Et cetera, et cetera.
Keep it going.
He is. Yeah. I mean, he is great. The Kings, like you said, the Kings really, they don't have a lot coming up in the prospect pool. They've traded all the draft picks for the next 100 years. They don't have anything coming. I mean, they have Adrian Kempe, and they have Tanner Pearson, who are their two number one picks. And Kempe, we still don't know much about. He's got 25 points, I think, this year over a pretty full season in the AHL, which I don't know much about how AHL translates for a 19 to 20-year-old that's playing the AHL at a pretty young age. But it's not... He's not jumping off the score sheet for sure. He's shown some flashes of skill at times, but not a lot more than that. And then Pearson, who is only, I think, 2 or 3 months younger than Toffoli, but hasn't asserted himself in the NHL nearly like Toffoli has. So the Kings really need a young player if they want to stay competitive past the next 2 or 3 years. They're going to be able to retool pretty easily as long as they have Kopitar and Doughty and Muzzin and Carter. But Toffoli makes it a lot easier to stay a legitimate contender going forward. So it's great that they have him. It's great that he's developed, and it's great that he's still developing and getting better, which he is. I mean, he even earned hefty praise from Daryl Sutter, which doesn't go out to anybody. He earned a lot of praise from Daryl Sutter today, so that's great.
Yeah, and it's been kind of strange talking, you know, we've talked a lot about on the site and just now about the prospect pool and how maybe those scores aren't there. And meanwhile, the Rain are up 4-1 after two periods. They'll clinch the Pacific Division tonight if they win. And obviously they're getting a lot of contributions from, you know, guys who probably aren't ever going to make an impact in the NHL, you know, older AHL veterans. But, you know, there are, I think, a good number of guys that could cut it at the third and fourth line level, and if you get one or two of them that maybe explode at some point and can fill out a top six, then you're probably okay. Like you said, the core is not going anywhere. But, you know, with Mersch down there, he had his moments up here this year. I think a lot of us were expecting him to sort of arrive and score immediately and stay, and that just doesn't happen as much as you think it would. But the Rain are doing well. They'll hopefully have another long Calder Cup run, and if they don't, they can hopefully come up with the Kings and get some good experience there.
Absolutely. I mean, I just love Tyler Toffoli so much. So hopefully the Rain do well, but... Hopefully the Rain do well, but also Tyler Toffoli is a King for a long time, so that's great.
Yeah, and he's signed through, what, next year?
I think he just signed a 2-year deal on his last extension, yes.
Yeah.
So he's that's coming up.
Got to be priority 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Next summer.
If Milan Lucic's contract gets in the way of this at all, it's goodbye Lucic. Like, Tyler Toffoli is the future of this team, or a huge part of the future of this team. He's a better player than Lucic is already also, so you can't let somebody like Lucic get in the way. Toffoli is, let's see, you have Kopitar and Doughty are 1 and 2, and you have Muzzin is maybe 3, or Carter's 3, and Muzzin's 4. Toffoli's right in that mix with Muzzin and Carter as far as the third best player on an elite team. And he's only in his age 23 season. I think he turns 24 in a couple of weeks, or maybe in a month. I'm not sure which.
Yep, April 24th.
He's excellent, and he's young, and he's great, and he's vibrant, and his face is so smushy, and you just want to pinch his cheeks. It's great. I love him.
We should do this every time we have a podcast.
Why don't we just have a whole Tyler's Foley podcast where we'll get like Diane or Chanel from Thanks Bud, and we'll get somebody else. We'll get Andrew Leafman because he's also written odes to Tyler Toffoli, and it'll be me. Mm-hmm. And we'll just be like, I love Tyler Toffoli. He's the greatest. I love him. Did you see that goal he scored? It was so cute and so cool.
His birthday is in 18 days, so I don't know
he
what day of the week that is, but hopefully
old.
We can have a little Sunday night birthday podcast. He's signed through the end of the 2016-17 season. Lucic actually, again, his contract is up this year. Pierre LeBrun from ESPN had a note either yesterday or today that they've been Lucic and the Kings still aren't particularly close. They've been getting closer, but they aren't really expecting to have an agreement done before the playoffs, which is the arbitrary deadline that they've set. I think that was the same situation as there was with Justin Williams last year, although Williams might have actually been the entire season. I don't recall. I blocked it out because I was so disappointed. Lucic is either going to sign before the playoffs start, or they're going to, you know, throw all their money at him after the playoffs are over.
I really don't know if they're going to re-sign him or not. I feel like they probably will not re-sign him. I feel like there's been a lot of bluster about how the Kings are re-signing him, maybe as a show of good faith to a player, but I feel like it was a one-year acquisition, that they needed something to hold them over and replace Justin Williams while they sorted the rest of the roster out. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I when they signed him, I just didn't see any way for them to retain him going forward. It wouldn't be the worst thing to have Lucic back. He's definitely exceeded my expectations for him. But I don't see a lot of room for him going forward, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm checking General Fanager, just the latest thing I'm going to plug on the podcast. But they have the Kings listed as having $65.7 million committed to 18 players for next season, which doesn't account for Lucic, Versteeg, Lewis, Dowd, Shen, McNabb, McBain, and Enroth. Dowd and McNabb are restricted. I'm sure both of them will get re-signed. I'm equally sure that Trevor Lewis will probably get squeezed in somewhere. And then at that point, you don't really have room for Lucic.
Are we sure that Trevor Lewis will get re-signed?
That, you know, you talked about the bluster with Lucic. I don't know, because he's not a center anymore, I think, for this team. I think you have Shore playing that role. Lewis, I mean, he's been fine this season, I guess. I haven't really noticed him a lot, but I never do.
That's pretty much his career tagline is, he's been fine, I guess. Yeah. That's pretty much his career motto. He's been all right, maybe.
I mean, he only made $1.5 million this year. If they're not going to sign him for, you know, double his money. But I think if they can get him under $2 million, I don't see them letting him walk. It's possible. I've been wrong many times before about players getting re-signed. Still miss you, Justin Williams. But Lewis,
stop bringing that up. What's wrong with you? Why do
I know.
You
I'm sorry.
Stop it. Jesus.
Stuck in my head. I'm making it an unpleasant experience for everyone. Lewis, I don't know. You don't think he's coming back?
I think he probably is. I think Dean Lombardi really likes him. But, I mean, if you want to bring up Dowd next season, then somebody's got to go. I think Dwight King is under contract for some time still. Andrew Othman.
Only 1 more year.
Like forever, the way he's played lately. Nolan's still under contract, as far as I know.
Through 2020.
Yeah, that's right. He was the one that signed.
Or 2018.
As a role player.
Yeah.
So if you want Dowd to come up, the question is whether you think Dowd or Shore is eventually going to be better than Trevor Lewis, because that's the only reason you really let Trevor Lewis go, because he's never going to be signed for long enough, most likely, although Jordan Nolan, surprise, surprise, signed for my entire lifetime. he's probably never going to be signed for long enough to actually hold somebody out of the lineup, because you can always just let him go after his contract expires, probably at the end of this year or next year, pretty much his entire career going forward. He's always in his career been a player that has more value to the Kings than he would in a trade or anything like that, but man, as soon as his salary goes up, if it's even close to $2 million, it's probably too much for Trevor Lewis. It would probably be too much for Dwight King. That's always the problem with the role players. As soon as they make a little bit of money, they pretty much are making more than they're worth. And Trevor Lewis,
King is already making $2 million or yeah. $1.95 million.
The way he's played lately, it's like it's about $1.95 million too many. But so I don't know. I think he'll probably be back most likely, because I don't see anybody that's really forcing him out of the lineup. I don't think Mersch has done that. I don't think that Dowd has done that. But if you want those guys to come up and play, then somebody has to move. And I don't think you're going to have Nick Dowd come up to replace Milan Lucic. If Milan Lucic leaves, then you have something else you've got to do in the offseason to replace him. So it's got to be somebody out of the bottom six that leaves to make room for somebody like Dowd or Mersch, and it's a question of who.
Yeah, and I bring up the $65.7 million figure. That's 12 forwards included in that. If you assume that Vincent McCavalier does not come back, and I refuse to discuss that question, at least now.
Haven't you said it publicly, like, several times that he's leaving? Like, I don't understand why this is a question. Like, he's leaving. He's done. Let's not talk about McCavalier.
Exactly. But so if he retires, it's $63.5 million committed to 11 forwards, 5 defensemen, and Jonathan Quick. Obviously, that's just including the NHL roster. So I think if Lucic does go anywhere or does re-sign, somebody has to go. Whether that long-rumored Dustin Brown trade happens, I don't know. But
it seems like we're heading
that
direction.
If the match was there... Yeah, if the math was there, I think Lucic should be back.
Daryl Sutter did call Andrei Kopitar the captain in quotes recently. Like, I think they're priming for a Dustin Brown trade. I don't really know why, but it feels like we're heading that direction. Somebody definitely would want him, and it would free them up at a potential expansion draft to lose another bad contract somewhere else too, because almost certainly Dustin Brown would be the person claimed, and you could maybe get rid of a different bad contract if Dustin Brown's actually gone already. So maybe it could be Marian Gaborik if Marian Gaborik doesn't get healthy. So I would not be at all surprised if Dustin Brown does get traded this offseason, just as an aside.
Yeah, and he's 31 years old. He's re-signed, and so he's, I guess, 37. It's sort of feels like written in stone now that Brown will not be here when his contract is up. So,
yeah,
he's been. I hope he doesn't end with this season, only because it's been a few years now where Brown probably hasn't gotten the sort of results he deserves from an individual perspective.
I think he's pretty much what he is at this point. Like, I mean, we have 3 years of sample now. He's not going to be a player that plays on your top line unless your team is considerably worse than the Kings is. And if your team is considerably worse than the Kings is, then his production's probably not going to be that good anyway, because he's not going to have a center to play with that's going to get him 30 goals like Andrei Kopitar did in 2007-08 or whenever it was that Brown scored 30 goals. So Brown pretty much is what he is, I think, at this point. He's a good role player. He is a strong community presence. He's a good leader. I think the world of Dustin Brown, but I'm also totally okay with trading him.
Yeah, and I'd be curious to go back and see just how much of Dustin Brown's, you know, like what he did sort of without Andrei Kopitar in his line. Obviously, when he came up, Kopitar wasn't there. He had a, you know, from my faded memories, he was making an impact pretty much from his second year or so on. So I don't
Definitely the year after the lockout, he was a useful player. Definitely.
Yeah, and it's probably unfair to call him a product of Andrei Kopitar, because he's obviously, and, you know, I find myself again looking at the points numbers and shaking my head, but the other aspects of his game, the penalty, the ability to draw penalties, which I think has never really gotten enough notice, especially in the last few years when the scoring numbers have gone down, his ability to draw penalties. And you're looking, like, you know, maybe two or three other guys in the league who have had that kind of consistent ability. One of whom is Kadri up in Toronto, who's now sort of getting that reputation and has been fined for diving and has been suspended, and Brown has still skirted that. So if he comes back for two or three more years, I'd be fine with it.
I'm okay with Dustin Brown being a King until his contract ends, because I think I've always been pretty sour about the Kings 3 years from now. I think they've given enough of their assets away. I was actually just talking about this yesterday, too. When you talk about the Kings going forward, like, Chicago was able to retool quickly. The Capitals were able to retool quickly. The Penguins were, but the Penguins did it, or the Ducks were another team that did it quickly, where they were able to retool and become competitive again. They did it through their prospect pools. The Penguins have great young defensemen. The Capitals had Evgeny Kuznetsov come up, and they had a couple of good young defensemen come up, and Chicago had Brandon Saad come up, and the Ducks had all of their great defensemen come up, and now Ricky Raquel come up. The Kings don't have anybody coming, so I've been pretty sour on their what they are 3 years from now. So Dustin Brown leaving wouldn't be bad, and him staying 3 years from now, probably not the worst either, because the Kings might only be an average team anyway.
Yeah, Raquel is kind of unbelievable. There are a lot of reasons I don't want to face the Ducks, but he's pretty much there to full way at this point. He's 22. He's had a breakout season that I think almost everyone in Anaheim saw coming, but nobody really knows Raquel outside of Anaheim. So he was picked 30th in 2011, so he's sort of there to Toffoli comparable, I think. He's not as good as Tower Toffoli because no one's as good as Tower Toffoli, but he's also, his name is Ricard Lars Gunnar Roland Raquel, which is a really good hockey player name, I think.
It's the best name since Jerome McGinley's full name, which I'm not even going to say, and I can't even remember, but it's a great name.
Would you like me to look it up?
I don't know if we have enough time left in the podcast to say his full name.
Well, this time I didn't force the hour-long cutoff, so I have time to tell you that his name is Jerome Arthur Lee Adekunle Tig Jr. Elvis Iginla.
And now we're all out of time in the podcast. Wow.
I just want to let that sit for a minute, too. That is great. So the Ducks... their rebuild on the fly, their transition from being a sort of paper tiger to an actual tiger with way too many claws. I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I remember before the season, it was like, wow, the Ducks actually got legitimately good. This is kind of scary. And now they're legitimately good. There's two teams in the NHL that scare me right now, and it's the Ducks and the Penguins. So pretty much if you're a bird, you need to get the fuck out of my life.
And the Penguins have been
they've been unstoppable. They are by far the best team in the East. I don't care how many points the Capitals have. The Penguins will beat them within six games in the playoff series, most likely. I mean, there's always room for error in hockey projections, but I will not put my life on a six-game series for the Penguins, but I would think about it. If I got something really cool, if I was right, I would probably
stick an arm out there.
Yeah, you can take my pinky. It's fine. I don't need that.
Yeah.
I'll bet my pinky that the Penguins beat the Capitals in playoff series if they face.
Yeah. How much Penguins does a golf swing suffer without a pinky?
They can have my left pinky. It does me no good at all.
Okay, that's fair. You
Little
heard
bit.
It. It's on the record. Nick's pinky on the line.
Please don't take
my
pinky.
I won't personally do it. I'm just saying if people hear this podcast and, you know, don't chop off Nick's pinky. I'll leave it at that.
Please. But I don't have to worry about it because the Penguins are going to win that series. I think that for the first time, like we mentioned Mika Blake-McCurdy earlier, I think his forecast for the first time for the playoffs finally had the Penguins as a slight favorite over the Kings to actually beat the Kings in the playoffs. I might be wrong, but I think that was...
They've certainly been inching closer. And for those that have been following our retweets, the Kings were favored, I think, ever since the day he started sending out those projections with Penguins, and then I think the Ducks as the sort of number three there. The Capitals are interesting because none of the projections right now like the Capitals, especially ones that are weighting the end of the season a little bit more heavily. There was one, I don't think it was the one we were talking about, but there was one projection that listed eight teams, like the top eight teams in terms of chances of winning the Stanley Cup, and I don't even think the Capitals were one of the top eight, which for the team that locked up the President's Trophy weeks ago is kind of shocking.
I mean, the Capitals are a good team. I think they're better than most of the projections have them, but I don't buy them as the best team in the league. They didn't impress me very much in either game against the Kings, for sure. That's a very very small anecdotal evidence, but I think they're a good team. I mean, you have Justin Williams. You can't really go wrong in the playoffs, for sure. You can't really go wrong if you have Alex Ovechkin. Kuznetsov seems excellent. Braden Holtby has been good, but not as great as probably people think he is, especially lately. So they're a good team, but the Penguins have demolished their opponents. It's really, I think in their last, I think it was maybe 15 games, they're like a plus 33 goal differential. It was absurd. They were averaging, even with three losses, they were averaging a plus two goal differential per game. They were beating their opponents by two goals per night. They were winning games by a lot. They've been on fire. They're playing in a weaker conference, but they've been great.
Sure. Yeah, I think that I actually don't think that any of the Pacific teams are above a plus 33 for the entire season. So saying that the Penguins have done that in a recent stretch is crazy. They beat the Red Wings 7-2. They beat the Capitals 6-2. They beat the Predators 5-2. They beat the Islanders 5-0. Flyers 6-2. So
the Flyers, who have also been playing really well of late, they looked like they weren't even playing the same game as the Penguins. So
yeah.
Penguins are probably the first team in the East that's been truly frightening in at least 4 years, since the Bruins maybe in 2011.
Yeah, who were, of course, the last team to win the Cup in the East. And the, you know, I agree. I think the Penguins right now are the favorites significantly in the East. I think the Capitals, they're going to play to the Red Wings or the Bruins or the Flyers in the first round. I think they win that matchup, even with how well the Flyers have been playing lately. But
I agree.
It's a bit of a crapshoot after that, I think. A capshoot, maybe.
Nice.
Thanks. I've been saving that one. I haven't been saving
nice.
That one.
Nice.
So, we're not out of time, even though we read Jerome and Ginla's entire name earlier. I guess to sort of end things off, do you think the Kings beat the Ducks tomorrow?
No. No. Maybe.
Yeah.
No. Probably not.
Maybe. It's at
Kings,
Staples, which is nice.
If it's a big regular season game for the Kings, they're not going to win it. It's the last three, last eight games of the season. They're no good. It's no good there. There's no happiness in the end of the season for the Los Angeles Kings. This doesn't start till the middle of April, not the beginning of April.
I'm sorry I even got my hopes up. I'm actually having dinner with Mark, my twin brother, who is infamously a Ducks fan, tomorrow night. So one of us will be very, very angry at the end of the evening, which I think is good. That's, you know, most family dinners, that's what's going to happen anyway. So if we're going to get mad at each other, it should be because of hockey.
I think make sure tomorrow that you eat finger food, because I wouldn't want to have a knife and my fork in hand at the end of that game and somebody that I was mad at there. I'm just saying.
I could rub buffalo wing sauce in his eyes, I think, if it comes
down
to it.
That would probably be better than stabbing it with a fork.
Yeah, yeah. It's a short-term thing. It's a short-term thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll deploy this for Mark later. So the Kings play the Ducks tomorrow, 7:30. The Kings finish against the Jets on Saturday. Tomorrow, of course, is the second last game of the season. The Ducks, I think, have the Capitals in the last game of the season. I'm trying to remember who they play in between, because they have
they play Colorado as well.
Oh, well, that's going to be a win for the Ducks. So, yeah, the Kings probably do have to win tomorrow, and probably have to win in regulation, I would think. in order to win the division.
Regulation win, and then any win over the Jets gets them in. It gets the Woodson division.
Yeah.
So hopefully they do. It would be nice for the Kings to come up big and get on the right track. I mean, I actually thought they looked good for most of the game last night, and then they just would have moments of breakdowns, which seems pretty standard for a team that's got nothing to really play for at this point. Nothing to truly play for. I mean, they have a little bit to play for, but not a lot. And they did dig in, and they fought through at the end. They never quit on the game, which is probably a good sign, all things considered. It'd be pretty easy at this point to quit on an early April game against the Flames because they're not going to the playoffs, and the Kings are.
Yeah. Okay. So that's where the season is going to end. I assume we will be back next week to preview the first round matchup. Any other Tyler Toffoli thoughts you want to end with today?
He's beautiful. I love him. He's great. I want to squeeze his cheeks. His hair is so nice and curly and long. He's just great. He's great. He's great.
He's great.
He's great.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. That was the second Jewel cast of the year. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
He's so great. He's just great.